When American voters head to the polls next week, they'll be deciding more than just which party comes out ahead in this election cycle. The winners of the midterms have the power to shape our democracy through congressional redistricting. That means the redrawing of the electoral map that happens every 10 years. And it's part of the reason why we're seeing so much outside spending on political campaigns, not just federally, but also at the state level. Here to explain more is Denise Roth Barber. She's a managing director of the National Institute on Money and Politics. Denise, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us briefly and hopefully clearly, how does redistricting work?
So after the 2020 census is conducted, states have to revisit their state legislative and congressional district boundaries and redraw them where needed.
What are they looking for in terms of redistricting?
Where the populations are and if new lines need to be drawn or new congressional districts need to be established based on the population numbers. So, for example, in Montana, we currently have one congressional district, and that may have to get rearranged into two, and then consequently another state would have to lose their district. I mean, there's only a certain number of House members in Congress, so you can't just keep adding to the number of congressional members. So they just get rearranged, but mostly just the lines get drawn with regards to who's in what district. That's primarily what happens. And if you're a state legislator, for example, you may remain that state legislator, but your district boundaries change.
And what kind of a role is redistricting playing in our upcoming midterm elections?
In a vast majority of states, the governor and the legislature hold the redistricting pens after the census. That means that currently, 29 governors and more than 800 state legislators who are on this year's ballot could have a hand in drawing the new maps. So it's a fairly important process that takes place every 10 years. A lot of players involved in who is going to be controlling Congress, to governors and senators who will be elected in 2018 because they won't be up in 2020. So they will be holding the redistricting pens.
So looking at the money that's being spent on political campaigns, what are you seeing? We just talked about how much money is flowing into political ads, coming from super PACs, coming from the campaigns themselves, individual donors. What are you seeing as far as money's concerned?
In addition to the fact that the U.S. House is at play in terms of flipping from Republican to Democrat, this is a very serious and major election at the state level because most states hold their big races during the non-presidential years. So we have 36 gubernatorial races on the ballot, 20 of which are at play. And according to Ballotpedia, there are 12 state Senate chambers that could flip based on the outcome of the election. So there is a group called the National Democratic Redistricting Committee, which is currently run by Eric Holder, who also was one of the recipients of a recent bomb threat. And his group, the NDRC, has given directly to state candidates and political parties almost $600,000. For example, they gave $250,000 to the Pennsylvania Democratic governor candidate, Thomas Wolf. They've given another $250,000 to the Georgia Democratic Party. They've given $36,000 to Wisconsin state parties, and they also gave $50,000 in support of a Ohio redistricting measure. And this is just money that is going directly to these candidates and the campaigns. We don't yet have data on how much money these entities and others are spending independently on state races.
I mean, you said it's hard to tell how much money they're spending independently. Are we able to find out who's funding efforts in state and local races?
Certainly, we're able to know who is giving directly to the candidates. And depending on the state laws, we know the groups who are spending. We may not always know, however, who's funding those groups. And that's the dark money problem that both races at the state and federal level are confronted with.
We've seen this in the past, in 2010. What was the Republican strategy back in 2010? And how effective was that for them in terms of redistricting?
Well, I mean, they obviously took clear control of the vast majority of chambers of the state legislatures throughout the country. They targeted specific races in order to do so. They identified which chambers were most vulnerable and which seats within those chambers were most vulnerable, and really spent money. And they were very successful. The Republicans had a majority in almost all of the chambers across the country, or in at least a vast majority of the state legislative chambers. Many congressional seats also swung Republican.
And I'm wondering, how much do you think constituents really know about what their state legislatures do, the power that they have? Do you think voters really understand the issues of redistricting?
Not at all.
No. Okay. No. So if they don't, why not? I mean, this seems to be so critical. It's a critical use of our census. It's a critical thing for those of us who want to get out and vote and who we're voting for. Why do you think this issue is so overlooked or misunderstood or not understood at all?
Right. I think because most people are just trying to get through their day and their year, and they're worried more about their health insurance and whether or not they have a job. And, you know, who draws the redistricting boundaries is kind of politically wonky. The whole process involves just a lot of geomapping, and it's really a game that's played primarily by the insiders of the political parties. The people who are going to the polls and the voters who are paying attention aren't paying attention to redistricting, but certainly the major political parties and their allies and these groups like the NDRC are very aware of it.
Denise Roth Barber is managing director of the National Institute on Money in Politics. Denise, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.